Well, here we are back in studio with the latest That's So Cincinnati podcast. I'm Burl Love, editor of The Enquirer, and returning after a one-week hiatus is your friend and mine, Sherry Coolidge. I'm so glad you're back.
It's always good to be back.
I mean, Jason was great. It was kind of like a throwback to the old days, but I mean, you are the podcast, Sherry.
Oh, well, you know what? It's had several iterations, and I do super care about it, but I've loved every iteration. I mean, my favorite was when Jason at the very beginning would be like, what should we talk about today? And the podcast would be in 5 minutes. Now, I think we plan like a day ahead,
so we're getting a little better. We are a well-oiled machine right now with, producer Phil here. I keep threatening this. We're going to mic Phil up one day.
Oh, I know. We haven't done that
just
yet.
Just so he can, you know, all the things he's thinking quietly, you know, keeping in his own thoughts.
Because remember, he does the Bengals one too. And so he still deals with Jason and he still deals with me. And there's a lot of
shifting change.
That's like
a lot of shifting. That's a lot of personality right there.
Yes.
So while you were out, big news has been happening. Ugh. Let's start with the railroad.
I know I wasn't even off last week, but I was covering a press conference. The city has AFTAB Puravol kind of took the lead on this, but the city's railroad board, yes, the city owns a railroad. There's a Q&A out there, explains everything for you guys. The city owns a railroad that it gets a lot of revenue from every year, like $20 million, $25 million, that in a lease deal. But you know, is this the time to sell and stop leasing it?
So just to back up, in case there are just a handful of people there that didn't read your fantastic coverage, I believe it's called the Cincinnati Southern Railway.
Yes.
And it is part of what's owned by
Norfolk Southern.
Norfolk Southern. That railway is actually that piece of it, almost 400 miles, owned by the city of Cincinnati, which is one of those head scratchers in and of itself, because we're the only city that owns a railway.
I mean, it was really forward thinking people, you know, 140 years ago that are like, we want to build this, because they wanted to be in control of the goods and how they came and if they came, and they didn't want to be beholden to someone else. They wanted to make sure that Cincinnati was well positioned. And
so they built the line from Cincinnati to Chattanooga, operated it until, you know, time marches on, things change, large corporations start running the railroads, and rather than sell, Cincinnati has maintained ownership of the railway and leases it for how much a year?
Like $25 million a year this past 25-year period.
Right.
So we're coming to the end of the lease, right. 2026.
And that money for, just to remind everybody, is set aside or earmarked for infrastructure.
Correct.
Which sounds like a great deal. $25 million coming in every year for infrastructure. Why would we want to mess something like that up?
In perpetuity, like forever, some sort of lease deal. Yes. But there were secret meetings, and we don't know, and some wheeling and dealing. And when it came time to the lease terms to be discussed, there's lease terms out there that we have made public records for. Whatever the discussion for the next lease period of what that would be worth, here comes $1.6 billion. We'll just buy it. And the Cincinnati Southern Railway, from the documents that I have heard exist, really did some due diligence. Now, we haven't seen any of these, and got the valuations, and, you know, they went through, you know, an 18-month process of really looking at this in executive session. You know, we have not seen any of the things. We can't really say, but they're saying it is a good deal and that we'll have this money that can be invested in $25 million. Heck, we'll get $50 million a year off the investment. And
so
that
the idea
it's
is
a better.
Take the cash, take the $1.6 billion, put it in a trust, and then every year let that interest kick off, whatever it's going to kick off. And their estimates, their projections say that on an average year, it could be double or more of what we're getting in lease payments.
That's what they said.
Sherry just rolled her eyes. Are you skeptical?
I can't.
Are you a skeptical reporter?
I'm sorry. But you know what? The problem is everyone is like, stop it, Sherry. Stop comparing it to other things that you've seen. Like, this is its own deal. But how many times have I heard, don't worry, there'll be the money, and the money, then it's not. It's nothing ever lives up to what they say.
And don't worry, the stadium tax, the half-cent stadium tax will be more than enough money to pay for all of these stadiums.
That would be the main comparison.
And yes, voters have long memories here. So, you know, I think a little dose
this
of skepticism
does have to go to a vote.
Is good here. Right.
This has to go to two votes.
Okay,
So it's two votes. So right now, you know, they changed it to say that it really does need to go to these infrastructure problems. There's like a provision, but really it was set out to be, if it's hard, there's a lot of interpretations of 140 years ago, what they thought the kind of provision, if it's ever sold, what should it be used for?
Can they just ask Jim Tarbell?
Oh, maybe.
Oh, sorry, Jim. I love Jim Tarbell. He wouldn't remember.
It's probably true.
No, probably he wouldn't remember. He's not that old.
So they want to change the language. So kind of this original language is like, if there's like serious, you know, financial problems, and now the language is it has to be used for infrastructure, kind of out of the mail report things. And they want to change the language in the legislature to say that it can only be used for current infrastructure needs, which is pretty specific, or not, depending on, no one's really said what that means. But okay, sure, there's a lot of those. And we're just waiting for the legislature. They probably will do that. You know, like, there's some consternation. Is this the best deal for the city? Should we change this language? But
yeah, my take on the step of having it go through the legislature is that's really procedural.
Agreed.
That's just allowing it to move forward to what ultimately will be
to the plan that's been devised.
But as far as will this happen or not, as I understand it, it'll be put to voters. It'll be a general election.
Yeah, city council has to vote to put it on
the ballot.
Yeah, but it's like a perfunctory thing, like a charter amendment. It's not a charter amendment. It's just, you know, yes or no. So council will vote to do that. We haven't heard from any of the council members on whether they think this is a good idea or not. They all attended the press conference. Not all, most. And they haven't, they didn't really say anything.
It was quite a lineup of people standing up at that press conference to show their support. You had, you know, Democrats and Republicans. You had former council members. You had
former mayors.
Former mayors.
That was the big one. All the former mayors.
Yes, the former mayors. So, I mean, to me, it's kind of like six of one, half dozen the other. Do you buy your car or lease it? It just depends on what your needs are. And I think that's what we're going to have to dig into to see, you know, what makes the most sense.
Definitely. Okay, right. So I was a little skeptical of just the numbers, just only because I haven't seen the documents. Honest to God, you guys.
Well, like, you're supposed to be skeptical. That's
right.
That's good.
I just show me the money. That's all I just want to see, and I just want to put it out so people can see for themselves and let people, you know, decide. And so, you know what? It's still early. We have a whole year. You think that we're talking about the railroad now? Choo-choo.
Well, my early opinion, and this is just, you know, my opinion only, is that, and has nothing to do with the financials, it's just really cool we own a railway.
That's true,
I think for that reason alone, we should just hang on to it and just continue to get, you know, to lease it for a while anyway. Because I just think I like trains. You know, I'm just going to say I think it's cool we own a railway.
Okay, I agree with that.
All right. So real quickly, the other thing that's floating around in your world of news coverage is at some point, Greg Landsman will have to be replaced on city council. He's heading off to Congress, and I think we're going to have him as a guest soon, right?
Yes, next week he's coming on. He's in Washington, D.C., learning how to be a congressman now.
Which, not to jump ahead to previewing our guests, but, you know, in terms of, you know, being fair to both sides of the aisle.
Yes.
We got Greg coming up next week. So who do we have this week, Sherry?
Alex Triantafilou.
Chair of the Hamilton County Republican Party with his eyes set on the state chair job. So we'll talk to Alex coming up. But real quickly, who is going to be the next city council member?
Well, there is a gigantic process that's involved, and I'm following this process only because
I'm— And how many applicants? How many people formally?
37. They got 46. I forget the number, the total number. More than 40. You know, they weren't all fully, you know, as they should be. there were 37 actual, you know, applications
that
submitted.
That were qualified.
That were qualified. Yesterday we heard, so Reggie Harris has been tapped to make this decision. I think he's like, huh, this is a lot.
And I believe the way it's set up is the outgoing council member chooses
yes.
from his party, mm-hmm. his or her party, the person that will be in charge of ultimately filling the seat.
Correct. And so he has a very, you know, it's an application process. I think very quickly he gave us the list, very, very quickly. Here's the people who applied. These are the names. The city law department had to kind of vet the application, so even I'm like, I get that. Like, for personal information to be redacted, like, there's certain things. So I get that. And that came to us yesterday. It's vast. It's a vast amount of information. And Reggie is going through it. Now, he said at council yesterday, he talked to all the council members, talked about what they were looking for in a candidate, which is a little, you know, vague. I would say these things too. Like, people have been involved in the community, people who can get along with the current council. I wasn't leaving the session like, wow, this is like really news. But he did say about half of the 37 were very serious candidates, and the other 37 phoned it in a bit. So I'm just going to, I have a short list, though, of my own. So we'll see sometime very soon here, probably before the podcast even airs, a short list from Reggie. But there's people talk, and there's a really just the short list of behind the scenes of people think they might, who the next person could
be. So you've seen the list.
I have.
If you were to, you know, place a friendly bet, mm-hmm. tell me the three people who are most likely to become a member of council, if you can.
Okay, so I think we'll start with Evan Nolan. He's just really been active in the Oakley community. He's a lawyer, and he's been on the community council there. He's done a lot of work. Oakley doesn't get tons of attention. It's one of the city's nice neighborhoods, but it's gone through a ton of transformation. And that's been driven by the community.
Yeah. I think the last time Oakley was in the headlines was for a hot minute. It was a site for the FC stadium. Do
exactly.
You remember that?
And exactly. Then- it's, you know, it's a great, it's one of Cincinnati's, you know, it's considered one of its great neighborhoods, like residential neighborhoods.
All right.
And okay. So, but he's also friends with the mayor.
Okay.
And he was the mayor's treasurer.
All right.
On his campaign.
And even though it's really not Aftab Perval's decision, I'm certain he's bending some arms, not twisting.
Or at the very least, yeah.
All right. Who
saying
else?
His preference behind the scenes. Allison Baradon, she is like a union attorney, and she, you know, we haven't really heard her name before, but she's just super popular with people in the party. Everyone kind of knows her. Like, it's the union. The union's at the city hall and everything, and they know her and appreciate all the work she's done. And so I heard her name a lot. Evan really kind of came out as a surprise on the list. He was the biggest surprise on the list because already people were talking. So people were talking about Allison, Seth Walsh, who runs, you know, the College Hill Community Development Agency. College Hill, under his watch, I've been able to tour what's happening there, and it's really a template for all of the neighborhoods. I believe that in my heart. We've written a lot about that. Randy Tucker has written about that. You know, someone that a name you probably doesn't roll off the tongue, Kate Bottas. She's was the Madisonville Community Council president for a while, and she's a real community activist caring about what's happening there because that neighborhood's gone through a ton of transformation, but she has been a voice of is a transformation for everybody. And I think that's something that City Hall likes to see. You don't have to always just go along with all the plans. And she just was like, I want to make sure that this neighborhood remains inclusive and it's for everybody. And so, and then Jamie Castle, she ran, people will remember her names. She's a teacher. She's somebody who really could appeal, I think, to a lot of voters in other races. So watch for that name to stay around. Jackie Frondorf, she ran for council. She was charter endorsed. She's popular. She's from Westwood, you know, like the big West Side contingent. Love her. She's been very active in Westwood. Speaking, I guess we're on the neighborhood. Like, what neighborhoods really have come along in the last years? These are the people who've brought the neighborhoods along. So she does a lot of work there. She's opened a plant store too, and like Westwood, the business district. I love it over there.
Well, obviously much more to come, and you will be all over it, I'm sure. And we're going to stick with politics now,
yes,
right?
Yes, we are.
All right. Well, let's talk to Alex Triantafilou.
Welcome back to the podcast. Special guest time here with Alex Triantafilou. I was really saying welcome back to Alex because he is a repeat guest for us. And, you know, I have to keep myself from slipping and saying Judge Triantafilou because that's like from my old days of court reporting. How are you?
Well, Sherry, I'm great. It's good to be with both of you today.
So, of course, I mentioned earlier we invited you on for a very specific reason. We are calling it New Job Palooza at the end of the year here. You are seeking to be the Ohio GOP chairman. But before we get to that, walk me back. I got to know you as a judge, but, you know, tell us about yourself.
Well, thanks. I don't know how far back I had to go, but, you know, I'm a lifelong Cincinnatian, Sherry. I'm born and raised on the west side of Hamilton County in Greene Township, actually, where I still live. I am, as Burrow well knows, a proud Greek-American boy, parents both from Greece, and, grew up here on the west side and ultimately went to the undergraduate school at the University of Cincinnati, law school at Chase Law, and I've been a lawyer since 1996. I've had a variety of different jobs along the way, including being a prosecutor. I was a judge, as you just remembered from several years ago. I was a judge for 5 years of my life. And for the last 15 years, almost 15 years, it'll be 15 years in March, I have been at the Dinsmore Law Firm, and I am also chairman of the Hamilton County Republican Party. So it's been a bit of a wild ride. I've jumped around a little bit, but some stability over the last decade or more as I've just been engaged in local politics. And I'm excited about maybe taking another step.
I think it's interesting that you use the word stability and local politics in the same sentence. I'm impressed. I am.
Well, since we're doing the bio part, and Alex, I should know this because I certainly know a lot of West Side Greeks, but did your family own a restaurant?
You know, Burrow, I think we were the exception that proves the rule. No, sir. My father was a proud union auto worker at the Ford Motor Company plant in Sharonville, Ohio. And a lot of people are surprised sometimes to hear that a Republican like I am came out of a union household. But indeed, I did. So my dad did not own a restaurant, Burrow. But like you, I think I knew almost every other family that did on the west side of town.
Especially on the west side. All right. I'm glad we got that straight.
Well, what's everybody's favorite? We'll go there. It's fun part. Real quick.
You can't pick a favorite. Professional suicide for me to do that.
Okay.
And I wouldn't be able to show my face in church.
Price Hill Chili, of course, and so many other great places. But anyway, West Side is, one of the best sides. How's that?
I mean, I live in your brother's house. That is so West Side, is it not?
Little known fact. I'm surprised you're putting it on the podcast. But indeed, you bought the house my brother once owned, which is still funny to me, Sherry. I laugh every time I drive by.
And I've lived here 20 years now. It was not my first house here, but I still live in that house. And so that'll be like Jack's house his whole life, I'm sure.
Yes.
Well, we usually save the That's So Cincinnati moment for the end of the podcast, but we just stumbled across it now that Sherry lives in the house of Alex Triantafilou, formerly owned by a Triantafilou. That's yeah. Just so Cincinnati.
It sure is.
And so West Side.
Uh-huh. But let's talk about, I did not see this coming. Scott Wortman, my colleague, reported 2 days ago that you were going to, Bob Poduchik is stepping away from the role. I don't know why. I'm sure it's so much fun. and that you kind of throwing your hat in the ring. What have you been thinking about this a while?
Well, you know, it's hard not to when you run a big county party organization in this state. And I've been on the committee. You know, for people who may be listening and don't understand the process, frankly, my own family barely does. But there's a committee of folks on the state central committee of the Republican Party. And they're, you know, as I've described this, Sherry and Burrell, when a lot of people go to the ballot and they get to the very end of the ballot and there's an obscure race they've never heard of. This has happened even to me, believe it or not. But, you know, they'll get to the bottom of the ballot and there's, you know, the Educational Services Commission is the one that I think most people end up confused about. But there's some races and you're thinking, what the heck is this? Well, a lot of those are state central committee members. And state central committee is a committee of elected Republicans who go to the state capitol and then select their leader, the chairman. So anyway, I've been part of that committee process for more than a decade. And I've watched, you know, things happen in Columbus. And very honestly, I've been approached at least two other times in my career about leading our state party. And the timing wasn't right for me. You know, Sherry, you know my situation. I've got one child and being his baseball coach and his mock trial coach and being on the sidelines for just about everything was really important to me. It really was. So I stayed here in Cincinnati and had a great time with a great law firm and, you know, and even a great time in politics, believe it or not. But anyway, the timing is right now for me. My son is now moved to Michigan and I've got the world's greatest, the most supportive spouse. So, you know, we're interested in this and it's something we are going to pursue, you know, to the extent that you want some of the specifics. The election will be January the 6th, believe it or not, in Columbus. And at the moment, the campaign is aimed at those 66 votes that are available in the state central committee for me to lead the state party. So to get back to your original question, which was a basic one, but I've looked at it for some number of years and, you know, I feel like I'm well positioned to do it. I've dealt with a lot of the issues that party leaders deal with, and that is, you know, trying to pull together a diverse coalition of people and ideas. And, you know, both political parties have fractures within them, and I have dealt with those fractures for many years. And, you know, it depends on who you talk to, whether they think I've done a good job or not. But I feel like I'm a pretty good listener most of the time, and I have patience, and I'm passionate about public service, and I'm passionate about politics and the I hate to call it a game, but I think that really ultimately what motivates me is that we do get to govern ourselves. And when you cut away all the chipping back and forth between the parties and the antics and everything else that go on day to day, we do get to decide, you know, and what you guys do in covering the people who are governing and then the people like me that are engaged in the fight. I mean, at the end of the day, we're just really trying to earn people's votes. And there's something really, really kind of really special about that in my own mind. And I try not to lose sight of it. And I mean it when I say it. It's what drives me to put up with a lot of the headaches that come with this. But anyway, that's a long answer that I'm prone to give sometimes about what's happening here and what we're doing.
Building a coalition is going to be key to this job. What are the two or three things you think you're going to have to deal with as like, what are the kind of the friction that you're going to find?
Well, look, we're heading into 2024, a presidential primary again. You know, we've been there before in 2016, and, you know, the Democrats have been there as well. And they had, you know, a pretty knockdown, drag out fight ultimately between Biden and Bernie Sanders. And, you know, I feel like sometimes on our side, those fractures get covered a little bit more intensely, but primarily because one of the people that's running, you know, tends to draw more attention, and that would be the former president. But I think the first big challenge of this job will be to do what we can here in Ohio to stay united and to really focus on getting a good nominee. You know, my personal view is that President Biden has been a catastrophic failure. So I think that we need to find a nominee who can challenge President Biden. And I think Ohio is going to play a key role in that. So, that is one of the first challenge really will be to manage through a contested primary, because I don't think that President Trump will simply be unopposed in a primary. Some people may think that. I don't believe that's true. I think others will enter this presidential contest. The other thing that's coming up for us in Ohio will be to challenge Senator Sherrod Brown. You know, his won two terms here in Ohio, but Ohio is certainly trending Republican, and we feel like we need to continue our momentum as Republicans in this state. You know, Mike DeWine led our ticket into a massive victory in 2022 here, and we think we're well positioned to win back that Senate seat. That has national implications, obviously, if we can put one in the red column here in Ohio.
But
so
there's no one person,
those
right?
Those are the things that are on my mind.
There's no one person that's like, no one Republican in Ohio that's kind of like the chosen person to run against Sherrod, right? It's going to be a drag out fight there, right?
I mean, we just had a nasty primary that J.D. Vance ended up coming through, and ultimately were successful in the general. So, the one thing that you guys both understand is that, you know, as the perception by folks is that we're a red state, then a lot of the fights happen in a primary. Now, I'm not one of these people that just assumes we're a red state. I think we still have great work to do. I think Mike DeWine has shown us the way by having crossover appeal and then leading with competence. So, I think that there isn't a chosen one, Sherry, to answer your question, and there shouldn't be. I mean, we should have a primary process to the extent that, every facet of the party wants to have its voice heard. And I think we'll get to a good nominee, and I feel like we have a really good chance to beat Senator Brown in 2 years.
What would you say is your number one quality that you have that can take you into this, and why would you be the best person to do this?
You know, Sherry, this is why you're a good reporter, because I don't have a great answer to that question. I think that the nuts and bolts of this job will require fundraising abilities, and I've demonstrated some ability here to find a right mix of financial supporters who have faith in my local leadership and who have accepted the message that I've sent. So I think I bring that to the table. You know, I really do, and it's hard, candidly, sometimes to be patient, but I feel like there is a certain level of patience that I bring to the job. And if, in case you haven't already noticed, I'm not afraid to talk. So all of those things, I think, are probably strengths that I have. And, we'll see. This committee will have to make a decision about whether or not my strengths are sufficient. But, those are the things I'm going to be talking about, as well as just a career spent. I think understanding this multi-layered chess game that politics can be sometimes. It can be a lot of angles, figuring out where everyone's coming from and just trying to get everybody on the same page is something that we've tried to do here locally. And I feel like I can bring some of that to bear statewide if I'm lucky enough to be selected.
We did. We ran a story, and it described Bob Poduchik as someone as being an ally of President Trump and a confidant of him. Do you talk to President Trump now?
Do I personally?
Mm-hmm.
No, I mean, I've just met him when he's been to town. I know this is a longer form podcast, so maybe I can just take a couple of minutes and tell you about the one time the man called my cell phone, if you're interested in the story.
Yes.
Well, it was interesting. He was president-elect at the time, and he was advocating for the election of Jane Timken as state chairman of the GOP. And I was down at our party headquarters late in the day, 5:30, 6 o'clock, and the first call I got was from a legendary figure here in Ohio, Senator Stanley Aronoff, who was also on the committee selecting the next state chair. And we had a vote, much like they're about to have, about who ought to lead the state party. And I had a vote in that process. And Senator Aronoff called me and said, "Are you playing a trick on me?" And I said, "What are you talking about?" He was like, "I just got a call from Trump." I said, "Senator, come on." He said, I did. And I think you're going to get a call too. He wants us to vote for Jane Timken for state party chairman. And I said, "Well, Senator," I said, "that's interesting." So I hung up, and I got a call within minutes, and it was whatever area code is DC, and I 212 or something, and I
202.
I answered it, and they is that right, Merle? Did I get it right?
202.
202. Okay, very good. And 212 maybe Manhattan. Anyway, either way, so the first call came in there. I took the call, and it was Mr. Triant. If you pronounce my name, I was impressed. And they said, "The president-elect would like to speak with you. Are you available?" And I said, "Yes." I said, "Well, we're going to hang up the line, and please keep a line open, and the next call will be from the president-elect." So I waited, and I got the call, and it was president. It was then President-elect Trump. And it was just funny to me, because that had never happened to me. I've called directly with the president, but their president-elect. And, he was exactly the way you would expect. And then the other thing I like to tell about the story, and again, whether you like him or not, I mean, he was about to be the president-elect. And I, of course, liked him and voted for him and supported him. But he said something at the end of the conversation like, "Well, you know, when I'm in Cincinnati, we'll have to get together." And I thought, well, you're about to be the president of the United States. So when you're here, I'm sure, he'd be happy to. So anyway, that's the one time I really ever had a really personal kind of conversation. conversation with the man on the phone. But getting back to serious political business for a minute, I don't know him. I think Paduchik may know him certainly better. He was at the RNC for a period. But I really am. I'm going to try my best here. I'm at a point in my life where I'm old enough, established enough in my life and who I am, that I'm going to try to steer our party clear of really picking sides in some of these primaries. If the committee decides they want to go in direction of the primary, that's fine. But I think it's incumbent upon a good party organization to provide the resources necessary for the Republican nominee to win the race. And I think the best way to do that will be to try to steer clear of some of that fighting that goes on inside the party and then stay really focused on November.
So before we get to November, if you become the party chair, one of the first, I don't know if you want to call it a distraction or challenges, will be the householder trial. How much of a factor will that be if you were to become the state party chair?
Well, one of my predecessors in this job, Jane Timken, immediately called for Speaker Householder's resignation. I echoed her comments within hours, I think, here locally, to the extent that people cared. I think that that's important that justice be done there, but I don't expect it'll be a huge distraction to what I'm trying to accomplish and what we want to accomplish here in Ohio. Unfortunately, there's corruption in both parties. We've certainly seen it at City Hall. And if I'm going to speak bluntly, which I'm going to do, we saw four members of Cincinnati City Council charged with crimes related to their job. The voters turned around that very same year and elected 8 of 9 from the very same party as the four people, well, 3 of the 4 who were leading in this what clearly was some level of corruption at City Hall. So, I think the voters care. They should care about the integrity of your elected officials, but I'm going to stay focused on the task at hand and let the justice system work. I think it was right for Larry Householder to step down, and we'll let the justice system play out, and we'll stay focused on the job we have to do for Ohioans.
Are you worried that during testimony there could be collateral damage that affect other Republican-held seats in the legislature?
I don't know enough about it, Burrell, to speak candidly. Again, as you know, I'm a lawyer, and I tread carefully on cases like this only because I know that speculating about testimony and things can be dangerous, only because I just don't know enough about it. Something tells me I'm about to learn more about it, especially if I end up in this state chairman role. But again, as I sit here today, it's just not something I've paid a lot of attention to. I think I read the 80-something page indictment in the summer of 2020. And since then, a lot has transpired, and I've had a lot of clients pay me to read other things in the interim period. So I just haven't really digested whether or not that happens. Speaking candidly about it, I think that, we as Republicans should send the message that we have power and we need to do it with character and integrity. And anything short of that from any party leader is off the mark. And the things that I saw personally that I read about that indictment gave me grave concern, and that's why I joined with then Chairman Jane Timken in calling for Householder to leave office, and he did ultimately. Took longer than it should have, but that's where I see the future.
So my advice to you, as someone who covered PG's trial, is it's the same prosecutors. Every single day, I was like, now, what did I just hear? So, and also for our listeners, I know that we think we know everything about House Bill 6, and we all have read that indictment a couple years ago and like, okay, House Bill 6, this and that. But when it gets to be trial time, I mean, I didn't think that they were going to shock me at PG's trial. But almost every single day, I was like, huh, okay. Didn't know that. So it was riveting. I'm hoping everyone really just follows. We're going to have a team of reporters covering it like we did the PG's trial. It's starting in January. Pay attention to Cincinnati.com for big kind of takeout stories where we're doing explainers and taking everyone back through it. Anyway, so I'm off topic here, but
that's okay. You were doing a promo for the Enquirer coverage that Alex had to suffer through, but it was good. It was good.
Okay. Can I ask you a local question?
Of course.
So we just heard news a couple weeks ago now that there is a plan to sell the Cincinnati's right to the railroad through the Chattanooga line. And I'm wondering if the GOP is going to take a stance on that, the local GOP.
So, you know, that has just come to my desk here in the last few days, actually, maybe a little later than you would think. I think the holiday kind of played into some of that. We're going to look at that. You know, we had there's some people on that committee that I have great respect for, who we know share, you know, the Republican view of the world. Paul Muthing being one of the finest local attorneys and leaders, really, in the region. Amy Murray, I don't have to tell you guys how fond I am in the Republican Party of Amy Murray. She was part of this conversation. I candidly have only exchanged a couple of texts with Amy, not even about this. She's just been traveling some. So what we'll do as a party, and again, I'm not dodging here because I just don't honestly know where we're going to come down on it, because I know there's some in the party that are skeptical about the deal, but I honestly cannot say right now where and what we'll do on the question. I know this. I know that my initial view of this, again, this is just Alex. This isn't the party necessarily, but generally speaking, as a conservative and sometimes libertarian leaning person, you know, I think that government is best designed to do the things it's designed to do. And when they're managing or owning, you know, what otherwise could be better managed or owned in the private sector, you know, I tend to lean in favor of getting government out of those kind of businesses. Now, the dollars of this deal and the financial impact and whether or not that's fair or not, that's just not, I'm not ready to make a judgment about that. But my initial assessment of it would be that getting the city out of this and getting the city to focus where it should. And, you know, I don't believe the city, frankly, focuses as much as it should on things like public safety and you know, creating a better environment for everyone in the city to grow their businesses, and even on housing. I think there's a Republican way to do housing. I think Liz Keating is led on that question, and I would like to see more people come around to her way of seeing housing. But anyway, all that to say that we haven't yet taken a position, but if it ends up on the ballot, I'm nearly certain we'll take a good look at it and decide whether we should have our Republican position.
Okay. That seems fair. And that has been, you guys, honestly, to the listeners, that I have a lot of people, like, there's still a lot to assess on this. Everything, one press conference is not, you know, everything somebody needs to make their own decision about whether this is good or bad, for sure. And so there's a lot more to come. And I get that.
So, Alex, I'm going to put you on the spot.
We didn't already do that? Okay.
Because you of all people should know the answer to this question. But who are the rising stars of the Hamilton County Republican Party? Who are the ones to watch?
Oh, well, we have many. You know, we have, and Burrow, I'm glad you asked, because sometimes it feels like the focus of our local press is on places like City Hall. But I remind people all the time.
No, I'm just kidding.
That's okay, Sherry. Sorry, it wasn't a shot. It was just being honest. But anyway, but you know, the eight big townships in Hamilton County have more citizens than the city of Cincinnati. So, you know, the eight big townships that surround the city are governed largely by Republicans. And I would argue governed very effectively. I think, you know, I think that Green Township, where I live, is governed more effectively. Our taxes are lower. Our schools are better. Our police is well-funded, and we just passed a good police levy in Green Township than the city. So I think that the Republicans have done a better job in the suburban community. So that being said, a lot of our strength is in the suburbs, and I can tick off many names for you. It starts with somebody like the former vice chairman of the Republican Party, Christy Davis, who governs very effectively in Springfield Township. I can go across town to someone like Josh Girth, who we have high hopes for in Anderson Township, who's one of our trustees. In my neighborhood, Triffin Callis, you may know Triffin, Burl. He's one of us Greek types. But anyway, Triffin Callis is becoming a real leader, and has become a real leader for the Republican Party. He's my vice chairman here in Hamilton County, and keep an eye on him if I leave, by the way. But
well, there's also that thread into the prosecutor's office with you and Triffin, and I think that's the fast track in some cases to prominence in the party, at least
well,
for now.
I agree, and again, I could go on, and the people who may be tuned in who I didn't mention, but
no,
you know,
keep going. We don't want to leave anyone out.
You know, again, several other people that we see is real potential candidates for us for state rep and other places. So I feel real optimistic about it. I mean, I know the county has changed. It is. That's a fact. And but, you know, we're going to keep fighting. And, you know, we've even got some good people that we think are going to emerge here for city council in 2023. And we're talking to some of them even as we move into the end of the year.
Ooh, who are those people? And are they on? Did they apply to be the appointee? Or
like I said, we're talking to some really good people. No, I mean, really, you know, I've never been shy about telling you when it's
you don't want Liz to be lonely.
People, but I, you know, some people are in jobs and other things and they don't want to be in the news yet.
Yeah, so, Liz is a little lonely there, the one, although she gets along with everybody and it has been nice to see the camaraderie there, even with different views and positions.
Liz is a model for how a Republican can win in the city and how a Republican actually govern. I think she's got the respect of her colleagues and, you know, she does an outstanding job and she's someone we, you know, have high hopes for. But Liz is, I'll tell you, I mean, Liz is one of those people when I want to sort of gently nudge her about her next career move, she doesn't allow for it. She loves being on the council. She's not interested in at ever really. I mean, this is the truth. She's not interested in talking about next steps.
Oh, that Landsman, the Landsman race. That Landsman race is already. People are like, who's going to run against Landsman next time? It's like he hasn't even taken the job yet.
I have not had that conversation with her. Others have begun that chat, but I hadn't even. That's not part of at all what she's ever talked to me about. She's very passionate about the city. She's really passionate about public service. And if I've got one complaint, I need to just be more political and, you know, be thinking about, you know, being president. But she won't do that. So she's been very, very, very solid.
Okay, so I like that, the naming of names. That was good. You know what? It's the end of the year. We do kind of start with like looking ahead and like this is a good way to get us into what's next, I think. So you'll be on the road, is that right, in this gigantic state of Ohio making your case for the new job?
That's right. I've got my young man is helping me and we are going to get around the state. It starts actually on Thursday. The days are running together already, so we'll be out. We're gonna head out tomorrow, some closer trips, and then next week we'll be in northwestern Ohio and beautiful Toledo, Lucas County. We'll make our way all the way across the street to Columbiana County and get out and see the beautiful state of Ohio. And you know, I really we have a great state in a lot of ways, and I'm really looking forward to getting out. I know a lot of the folks already, but just getting out of my little bubble here in Cincinnati and getting out across the state is exciting to me, and see if this thing works out.
Okay. Well, Alex, thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate it. We hit on a lot of topics, and you are a talker, and that makes the best That's So Cincinnati podcast guest.
I certainly hope so, and I always enjoy joining you guys, and no offense to Burrow, I do miss Jason a little bit, but he's doing a great job on sports, but anyway, it's good to talk to both of you.
No offense taken. Someone had to get in the chair. Thank you, Alex.
All right, thanks so much.
Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
All right, bye. Thanks to Alex for joining us. As somebody who's from Youngstown, Ohio, I know Columbiana County well, and this is a gigantic state, and he's not joking around. He's really going to have to, it's a lot of travel involved in the next couple of weeks for him about if whether he's going to get the job. There's going to be a lot of people vying for it. So we'll be watching that to see who.
How would you handicap his chances? I think he's one of the most, I mean, he's one of the better known county chairs.
Well, because we're from a big county.
I
think that his stance on this is going to be a popular one of, you know, kind of letting, like getting, making everyone get along. That's something
right.
He does.
Not tearing apart each other during the primary.
He knows his strengths and what to say and how to position himself in the fundraising. I do think those are two very important things. But the people who are voting on this come from the smaller counties. And so sometimes the smaller counties kind of all get together and they're like, they like the small county people because they all know each other.
Right.
It's like the big counties know each other and the small counties know each other. So there's like that kind of play behind the scenes. It'll be interesting to see. It is no easy job coming up. He made it seem much easier than it was. Is, you know, former President Trump going to run? That is going to be very hard. And it's going to be hard to navigate who's going to run against Sherrod Brown.
Yeah.
So it is a tough job. So,
all right. Well, you know what's fascinating to me about Alex too, being Greek, is that he is part of the kind of new generation, new-ish, of Greeks that don't shorten their name.
Oh.
So he's got a 5-syllable last name. If you look up his bio page, he actually has a pronunciation guide, so you know which syllable to emphasize. So, you know, his name is Triantafylou. And for example, the name shortening that Greeks used to do, going back to Ellis Island, Pappas is a really popular Greek name. And I had a friend named Nick Pappas, of course, Nick, you know. He probably has a cousin named George. But anyway, he would get all the time, oh, you're a Pappas. Do you know Bill Pappas or do you know Dean Pappas? And or are you related? And likely the answer is no, because Pappas, for example, was shortened from a number of different possible names. Like it could be Papa Nicolaou, Papa Georgiou, Papadopoulos, all right? And they just shortened it to Pappas. But now you've got – it's no big deal to have a big, long Greek name anymore. So you got Triantafylou here. I'm thinking of like Zach Galifianakis. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a mouthful right there. And people say it, and they actually pronounce it relatively right. George Stephanopoulos, you know, former assistant to Bill Clinton and now, you know, network news guy. So I think it's kind of – it's amusing to me that, you know, part of what Alex has to do to get his name out there is to teach people how to pronounce it right. And in Hamilton County, that's a big, long Greek name, and people don't have any problem with it.
I could always pronounce it because I am Italian, so it's kind of the same thing. But I will say, one of the moments, you can always look back in your journalism career, like when you feel comfortable in like what your new role is, because I've done different things and they're all new challenges. It's not just reporting. It's like getting to know what really what you're doing. But I had a moment where I was writing a story and he was a judge and I could just spell his name without having to look it up and spell, prosecutor Mark Pietmeyer's name.
Yeah.
And the moment, like when I was able to, it was like a one day where I had to write both of their names without looking them up. And I was like, huh, I guess I cover courts. So anyway, so like the spelling for me was a big deal.
Yeah. I can't tell you how many times in my career when I was my first tour duty at the Enquirer, where I had to look up names like Zerbiak, just out of Miami University, had Wally Zerbiak.
I think we probably all still would have to do that.
And then Roethlisberger, you know, good names to spell. Okay, so anyway, what'd you do over Thanksgiving?
I pretty much relaxed. I have been really kind of crazy, parties, travel. So I just relaxed over Thanksgiving. I did go to the tree lighting.
I saw that.
It was everything that Christy Samad promised that it would be. I don't know. I just had the best time. I have to say, here was my biggest surprise. So there we went to the Container Bar, right? And then there was some other bar set up. Not that I'm some like alcoholic or anything. I had one drink, but I was like, okay, a warm hot chocolate, right? Well, you're at the tree lighting. And they were spiking it. They were selling it spiked, right, if you wanted, with strawberry vodka.
Okay.
I did not see that drink coming. It's now in my head, the 3CDC drink.
Okay.
Actually, it was actually pretty good.
That does sound really
good. I'm not sure it was the best mixer, judging by the morning after, but.
No, that sounds fascinating. So, I mean, that's fun because we had, you know, a recent guest talk about the tree. We had a recent guest talk about the Thanksgiving Day race where I was on the fence about.
What did you do over Thanksgiving?
I was on the fence about running it or not because that's how I am. I don't plan in advance, but I did it. I got out there. It was a glorious day. Blue sky. It was before it kind of got cloudy towards the end of the day. Started crisp, you know. In the temperature in the 30s, it was getting up to the mid 40s by the time the race was over. And it was just, I forgot how fun it is to be out there with a bunch of idiots trying to run a Thanksgiving Day race.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
because it's not the most serious of the runners.
But then the rest of it was there are people running in turkey costumes and feathers and pilgrim hats and everything like that.
So you run in your neighborhood at home, right?
I
so
do,
you were
yeah.
at least sort of ready to do
oh, yeah.
it, right?
Yeah.
How was running the bridges?
You know what? I'm in a hilly neighborhood.
Okay, me too.
All right? Yeah. So I'm used to the hills. They weren't as bad as the hills near my house.
Ooh.
But yes, bridges are not flat, everybody, if you've ever tried to run across the bridge. And I was joking with Julie Absurding about my pre-race preparation.
Mm-hmm.
You know that.
How did that go?
Well, I had Skyline and I had a beer, and
I'm so proud of you.
and let me tell you, I wasn't the peppiest at the start of the race. You know, I might have been a tad sluggish, but at the end of the race, my gas tank was full.
Oh, like I was, I could tell in the pictures.
I could have run another 2 miles because I hadn't run out of fuel yet. So it was the perfect carbo load for the amateur runner that I am to get out there. But, you know, they do a great job with the race. It was, you know, a little cold in the morning, but you couldn't have asked for a better day and a better event.
That's how,
and,
yes, it wasn't raining.
No.
No, it was sunny. It was
so if you've never done the race, you can walk it. It's a Cincinnati moment, like the tree lighting, that you should at least experience once.
Agree. There were so many families there. It was a really nice event. Just tons and like people with kids and strollers, and it was reminded me of when I did that with my son. It was a really good night.
You're not going to stuff your 15-year-old in a stroller anymore?
No.
All right.
I did make him go, though.
And I bet he complained but had fun once he got
there. There you go.
In classic teenager fashion.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think we got it here. That's a wrap. Thanks, everybody.